Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Diane Kerr. Diane Kerr's new book, Butterfly, was published by Cherry Grove. Her chapbook, entitled One, was published by Parallel Press in 2007. Poems have appeared in journals such as Alaska Quarterly Review, Pearl, Poetry East, and Zone 3. Diane Kerr teaches at the University of Pittsburgh Writing Center. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Fine.
I'm really happy about your new book, Butterfly. It's such an accomplishment.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you're going to just start from the book, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. The book is really one long poem of many parts. The parts don't have titles, so I'll just pause briefly between them. And I'll read four to start with. Unsustainable silent weight on the crossbeams, deep fissures surfacing in the plaster. The contractor said my house was falling slowly inward. Some previous soul had removed a load-bearing wall. Some joists were shorter than others, couldn't support what they weren't made to support. So he sistered them, which means to splice, to add a sort of splint that connects each inadequate sagging side to the other, spanning the weakness in the middle, making the heaviness bearable again. At 30,000 feet, two moons compete in the window view. One, a high August chrysanthemum, the other, its wavering orange reflection on the long sack of Lake Michigan. Again I will arrive, uninvited, to visit my drunken brother. Brother from the Greek frater, as in fraternity, as in fratricide. Always he swims away from me, always kicking away. I was the dark moon curled against him in the first sky of the first night, curled crescent, I was the always other. How annoying another self, shadowing the barely self, brother, as in brotherhood, next door to brothel, old English neighbor of Brejotan, which means to waste away, to go to ruin, I mean to intrude. The 737 slides its shadow across the calm evening lake and drones down to mild, clear Milwaukee. He was the expected, hoped-for one. It was 1942, before sonograms. Sometimes the two hearts beat together. Halved and huge, a cut blood orange, against the navy blue sky, the harvest moon rose bruised, crosshatched, flecked with starlings swirling down to roost on the wire veins of the city. The earth and moon love each other only once a year this way. Your life, your only life. It was the moment I knew your life was emptying from you. Stub-tailed, speckled, ecstatic, the starling sang the world's beautiful song. I stood in the parking lot and wept. Wept that you lay 600 miles away. Wept that you could neither hear nor see the evening's old orange opera and that you could no longer want to. Nothing was garnered, gathered in, and nothing was stored by. They said you bled from every pore, and nothing, nothing could stanch it. Hard white plaster helplessness. The rest of that summer sullen together. Twins must be always leaving and returning to a mirror. I can't remember if I smashed my elbow before or after he dove, arms forward, through the hay chute, straight down. He must have seen the milking parlor floor coming, lime whitewashed, bare cement. It must have been after. I was walking on a rolling barrel, playing circus. I fell suddenly. He didn't fall. He dove, then came walking slowly across the barnyard, sleepwalker arms held out front, wrists dangling limp, two hung things. He came up the back steps as slowly as in last night's nightmare. But I fell quickly, backwards, surprised, surprised as I was when the doctor set the elbow, his sweet, fruited whiskey breath, And when he placed it, the piercing inside crack of pain, like that. It was like that when you told me he was dead.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Diane Kerr. She's reading from her new book, Butterfly. Diane, can you talk about the process of writing this book, maybe the decision, if it was a decision to write a long, one long sequence, a poem sequence? I mean, that seems to me a daunting task, you know?
I think the decision to make it a sequence came later. The process was that I was in the middle of an MFA program when my twin brother died, and I began writing these poems. And the more that I wrote, the more it started to feel like a sequence rather than a book of separate poems.
Well, also, I mean, there's the element of grief with, you know, the poems about your twin brother and the mother also. Did writing about grief, I mean, that kind of grief, present, you know, other challenges or unexpected developments in the process of writing?
You know, I think the writing became the grieving. It became a way to grieve. My mother died actually 2 years after my brother, but she went into a real decline after his death. And then when she died, it was as if the two griefs sort of merged together. And it became clearer that she really was part of the story, that it really was a sort of triangle with my brother and I and her.
As you know, I mean, there are plenty of writers out there who run into roadblocks, and sometimes those roadblocks are people who they lose or running into grief. And I wonder if you have any sort of advice or suggestions for people who are sort of paralyzed by that. I know some people don't write into the grief through the grief, and anything that you think enabled you to do that?
Yes, I think it is an individual thing, and I think you have to be really kind to yourself and allow yourself to write or not write what you need to write. For me, it was a real way of dealing with the grief. And so it did feel like I was writing through it. I had really good support at the time. I had really excellent teachers who really helped me feel safe in writing these poems.
Okay. And when you said be kind to yourself, allow yourself to write what you need to write, what do you mean by that? Like to not revise or?
No, I think it means it's sort of a wide spectrum of things. It means it maybe means not writing because you're not ready to write the poems, and then it means just writing what you're feeling without any expectation that necessarily this is going to get published or this is going to turn into a book. But these are just part of your process.
Okay, could you read some more poems?
Sure. I'm going to read three more poems, and the first one is really a dream poem. Our mother's house. In the dream, someone, a noise at the door. Huge, snarling Great Dane, rearing up, mouth open. I slam the door. No, it's going around to the backyard, where the new puppy is playing under the blooming lilacs. It has the puppy, snapping its neck again and again. Then the puppy is asleep on the summer lawn. I grab him. I'm almost to the back door. The Dane is charging up the steps. I grab the hose, turn it on, fill the great mouth, its deep gullet enraged. It vomits, lunges for us. I see the dark, ridged, pink roof of its mouth. I wake up. Again, you are dead. Crouched under wrought iron frets of our wooden desks, we wait through grade school, practicing disaster. The giant mushroom that would foreclose our future. Calamity has already come to claim my brother. Held back in second grade, When he isn't sitting in the principal's office, he sits scowling at the happy children in the Impossible Reader. I have gone on to third. Regular drills down the rickety iron fire escapes, each class a place on the graveled playground, each child a partner. Always I look for him. Always I make sure he's out. We didn't say held back, failed. We said failed. It's a mistake to believe one twin always knows what the other is doing. I don't know why he drank himself to death, any more than I know what he was building or destroying when he raised that clawfoot hammer too far back. We were 10. He had a mohawk. He was barefoot, shirtless. From the back porch steps, I was watching him straddle a 2x4. He was yelling, in a rage over what? When the clawfoot, as if it had changed its mind mid-swing, swooped suddenly down onto his skull, then raked forward and up. Why did he just stand there, silent, warm red rivers already to his shoulders? How was it I was watching? That part I know. My job was to run inside and tell. Okay, now I'll read a few more poems. Since we were twins, even though we were fraternal twins, there was a lot of comparing that went on. And a couple of these poems, the first two, have to do with that. We didn't look alike. Breech babies. Two perfectly round little heads, our mother said, though I outweighed him by a pound, which worried her. She believed only girls should be frail. Her firstborn, both colicky, he wasn't gaining. The doctor gave him B12 shots, the needle so long when it plunged into his small bottom, she could hardly bear it. When he died at 54, she said, now my tiniest baby is gone. Only sometimes dressed alike, blue sailor suit and sailor dress the first day of kindergarten. I was the frail one then. Aren't they darling? The teachers mewed. One put her thumb and index finger around my wrist. So thin, but she's the smart one. Another smiled. Yes, but he's the handsome one. We didn't look alike, except our eyes, the same hazel green eyes. When he appeared in the vision, come back from eternal blackness, in the same urine-soaked bathrobe, the same soft-clapping slippers stuffed with his swollen, mottled ankles, ice cubes still rattling in his glass, his face the same yellow bruise, I looked into his eyes. They were tear-filled, pleading. They were my eyes. Banker one. Still can't balance a checkbook one. Beautiful, wavy-haired one. Your grandmother's miserable hair one. Sturdy, never sick one. Asthma, eczema, earache, high fever, bleeder, always got something one. Good sleeper one. Bedwetter. Pellet gun, pigeon, squirrel hunter one. Stray runt of the litter, reject rescuer one. Lots of friends one. Loner. Sharp dresser, has girlfriends, goes to the prom, knows better than to argue with adults one. Little commie pinko reads too many books for her own good one. Never left town or us one. Lever. David, named for your grandfather one. Diane sounds good with David one. Firstborn male child, female. Heart's pride, problem. One who drank. One who didn't, one who died, one who should have. And the next poem is actually the poem from which the title of the manuscript, Butterfly, is taken. Inside of her, I could not tell where he, one soft side, left off, and I, the other half, began. Curled back to back, we made a butterfly. There was never a picture of it. With her body, she grew that picture inside each of us. After she found him, where he had fallen, and after he died, she taped the first photo by the phone, the hospital snapshot of her propped up, young face tentative, smiling, a sleeping full moon on each waned arm. Long ago, she wrote my name with an arrow to one dark-haired circle, his name on a thin line to the other. Now, she hasn't taped it well. Again, it's fallen to the kitchen floor. She's not smiling at either of us in the snapshot. She's smiling straight ahead, saying, "Look, this one is you. This one is your brother."
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Diane Kerr. She's reading from her new book, Butterfly. Diane, I wanted to ask you about something the writer Molly Peacock said, which was something like the use of form as a container to hold difficult material, to hold difficult emotional material, and how she uses that with her work. And I'm wondering if there's any relationship between, you know, some of the difficult stuff you're writing about and the measured lyrical sequence that appears in the book, if you relate it all to that statement.
Yes, I think I can relate to it. These poems are not written in set formal forms, but there is a lot of formality in them. Some of them we could call nonce poems, which means it's a made-up form. There's one rhyming poem, I think, in the whole manuscript, but I think the form does operate to help manage the feelings and the grief. I think that's what Molly's often after in her poems.
Mm-hmm. And that, what did you call it? A form, making up form, what did you call it?
A nonce poem. And I can read one of those if you want me to.
Okay. Nonce as in?
N-O-N-C-E.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the nonce part of it here is that there's a repeated word in the what's really a second stanza. So every line begins with the first two words are the same. We also call this anaphora, but in this poem, it really takes on a formal element, I think. Finally, you are first, and first forever. Who were ever second, ever delivered one hot half hour later, now you have surpassed me one full year. First to lie alone, stone still, first to wear a mound of wilting bloom, first to sink under the sour leaves, first to freeze under the frozen snow, first to molder, first to be mourned.
Okay. So created forms that you kind of make up.
Yes.
On your own. Do you have a lot of those in the book? Or?
No, I wouldn't say a lot. There is another poem that's rhyming, and it's in tercets, three lines. And I'll just read that. It's not real long. Some poets want their tercets to stay triplets, not expand to quatrains, contract to couplets, which might feel as if in the end there was too much, too little, a few too many, or too few words, an uneasy imbalance that topples the pyramid of a three-part harmony. But I live twinned, unable from conception to be apart, too far from some close half-other. Think of how every heart divides, needs each hollow chamber, one side to fill, one to empty. A missing line is my missing brother. Not until he was gone could I see I was his not him, he was my not me.
Okay. One thing that that shows up in that poem, and one thing that I really like about the book is there's a sense of joy in some of the poems, and a sense, definitely a sense of play. And I realized when I was reading it that sometimes I forgot, you know, that there was all this grief, for a minute anyway. And I thought that gave the book so much like dimension and different kind of depth. And I'm wondering if those poems came later or were intentionally, you know, added for balance or anything like that.
No, they just came as they came. The last poem in the book came much later, years later. And it's certainly more playful than most of the others. And I think that's because I really was in such a better place with the grief. Do you want me to read that one?
Yeah.
It's a little longer than the others, and it's actually a letter poem. It also has an epigraph from Brenda Hillman. Why do you think you were called to this world? You were called to be loved. You were called when you weren't here, Brenda Hillman. David, it's 2012, a rare gift of November generosity, 65 degrees in New York City. With a bunch of other tourists, I'm sitting in Friday evening twilight on the steps to the Metropolitan. It's our birthday. We are 70. Down front on the sidewalk, a lone saxophonist, lost in his solo song to the city, raises his riff up over the taxis in a deep ribbon of sweetness that floats high above the avenue, reaching all the way to Times Square. Throng swirling, light everywhere, buskers flip and somersault in the street. Mickey and Minnie mingle, working the crowd. The Cat in the Hat ambles by. On a traffic island, a guy in cowboy boots and his underpants sings and plays his guitar. Two statues of Liberty, one in a rainbow bikini, lifts her rainbow-lighted torch. The other, silver spray-painted head to toe, sits on the curb eating a corn dog. David, we've elected a black president. Twice. And since you've been gone, everyone has their own computer, and look, we all have these little portable phones. You can call anyone from anywhere. Nearly dark now. Come with me into the great museum. We'll go past the complicated first floor armor, past the second floor Andy Warhol retrospective, soup cans, Marilyn's, and Jackie's, past the third floor Buddhism and the Silk Road special exhibit, Peace and a Thousand Bodhisattvas. Here, before this single lighted case, we'll stop. Han Dynasty funerary miniatures. Fisher-Price toys from the 3rd century. Little moss green ceramic models of everything needed. I would send them all with you. I would gather the small pen with 6 rams, the one with 4 sleek geese, the one with 3 stout pigs. I would give you the granary tower, the sturdy outdoor oven, the many-storied watchtower, give you the family house and its courtyard, the well and its fragile bucket.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Diane Kerr, reading from her new book, Butterfly. Diane, I wanted to ask you, with a book so grounded in family and family details, I was wondering if you got a lot of support from family or if you were concerned about family response because of the nature of the book.
The family is pretty much, I was going to say scattered, maybe shattered might be a better word. So no, there wasn't a lot of family support. My mother was really declining until she really reached a point where she couldn't communicate at all. And the rest of the family is just pretty distant. Most of the support really came from my friends and the really good teachers that I had.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you have that. We have time for just one or two more.
Okay. I'll read two, and these poems are sort of linked in a sense because they had to do with sort of deliberately looking for some good memories about my brother. There was a lot of conflict between us. You know, sometimes people can be really close in a sense by being really far apart. And we had that dynamic. So I'll read the first poem, which has to do with looking for the good memories, and then the one that follows, the one memory that I did find. Once a gladness, perhaps turning your head, your smile when you saw me. Perhaps you were hunting when you came home, when you set down your gun. I've looked everywhere, as if mislaid, but mine, as something lost in my house, is still mine. Delight, a place, a time. Once, perhaps we were fishing. Perhaps in a hushed voice you told me where the trout lay, or walking silently in the woods, you touched my arm, pointed to where the deer sleep in the deepest bracken. Memory, from the Greek mermera, to care for, which is to mourn, to look for, to go down, underneath, to dive, as the sunken treasure hunter inside the barnacle tangle for a gleam, or to dig, thy feel to dig down, to ferret, inside the dark warren, ferret, furitus, Latin, little thief, by sound, by scent, finding once a quivering, a softness.
The poetry of Diane Kerr. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 WESA.